Morning, everyone. Today's Daf and Nazir is Nun Hey. We started the Mishnah yesterday on Nundalat Ahmed Aleph, going into Nundalat Ahmed Beis, and it's a contrasting Mishnah. Just a moment to thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the Daf. Daf is learning Lezech Nishmas Liba Gabriela Bashmuel. And the contrast is between the Mishnah Memtes and the Mishnah Nundalat. Mishnah Memtes tells us that there is a Nazir comes into contact with certain Tumas Hameis. So a Nazir is required to be Megaleach, which means that the Nazir has to be Metar himself, like anyone who comes into contact with Tumas Hameis. But more than that is that he has to recount, he has to restart his Nazirus. All the days that he counted up until that point in time are totally eradicated, expunged from the record, and he's got to do it all over again. Masha'in Kein, our Mishnah that we started yesterday, and Nandalid talks about where someone becomes Tameh, and Nazir becomes Tameh, but the Tumah is not going to eradicate the numbers that he counted. Most of the cases that we discussed yesterday in the Mishnah, so basically what's going to happen is that he's going to be postponed from his Nazirus. So let's say, for example, his Nazirus was for 100 days, and let's say he's halfway through 50 days, and then he comes into contact with any of the Tumas that are mentioned in yesterday's Mishnah. So what he does is he just simply takes a break from counting. 50 days that he counted are still on the books, still on record, and then after he finishes Tahara, Maschul Amona Miyad. Now you resume counting, you start again, and you count. You pick up right where you left off before you become tummy. Okay, so those are all the cases in the Mishnah. There are a couple cases in the Mishnah mentioned yesterday where you can even count while you're tummy. So, for example, the end of the Mishnah we learned yesterday that you may hezger. Let's say you are a mitzora, but not a mochlat. The Kohen did not definitively say you were a mitzora, but musgar, only a period of being sequestered, wait and see. So during those days, the Mishnah says you can even count through. So Zavan is Zavah. Another example said the Mishnah yesterday, right? While you're a Nazir, so the man's a Zav, the woman's a Zavah. So there also, you can count through. You don't have to, you don't even have to take a postponement from your counting. But the other cases are mentioned in the Mishnah, so you postpone your Nazirus, but it doesn't remove, it doesn't discount the days that you counted prior to Nazirus. You're just simply, for the baseball analogy, you are on rain delay. But you then, afterwards, you continue. So the examples that are given in the Mishnah are schachos and praos. So those are protrusions coming out of the wall, overhangs. Yesterday, briefly, we discussed, generally speaking, if it's an overhang and you know there's a mace underneath, that's ohal. I mean, that's tumas ohal. That's, you know, that of course is going to make you tummy. The Mishnah was describing scenarios where it was suffik. It was not a definitive case of tumas ohal. It was a suffik. And yes, we normally have the rules of suffik tumah b'rishus harabim is tahor. Suffik tumah b'rishus yachid is tummy. We do normally have those rules, but for the nazir, he's going to have to be mitar himself, but it doesn't discount the days that he counted prior. Those are the first two cases of the Mishnah. The Mishnah then went on to discuss the Beis HaPras. The Beis HaPras, the Gemara did not really discuss at all. The Mishnayos and Ohalos discusses Beis HaPras. A couple Prakim, if I remember. But the Mishnayos and Ohalos discussed it. Beis HaPras, basically, there are actually a couple of different types of Beis HaPras, but there was a cemetery, and somebody plowed through the cemetery and dispersed the bones and the remains all over the cemetery, so you're not allowed to walk, a Kohen, I should say, is not allowed to walk in the entire perimeter of the Beis HaPras. So if you have a Nazir walking through the Beis HaPras, again, the idea is that we don't know if he came into contact with Tumah, but because it's a designated area of Beis HaPras, so therefore, the Nazir is going to have to be Matar himself, but again, because it's only a Beis HaPras, he doesn't lose the days that he counted previously. And then the Mishnah went on to discuss Eretz HaAmen. You go outside of Eretz Yisrael, so you are in a makom tuma. The Chachamim made a gzera, that area outside of Eretz Yisrael is by definition tamei. Now, exactly why they made that gzera? So the Gemara never really articulates. And what we will see today, and that's our starting point for today's discussion of the Gemara, is when they made the gzera on the Eretz Ha'amim, on any area, any real estate, any area outside of Eretz Yisrael, so did they make it on the Gush, did they make it on the ground, or did they make it on the Avir? On the Gush, so that we understand a little bit better, the idea is that people are buried, and people are buried everywhere, and maybe the non-Jewish population are not that makpid, they're not that careful in terms of exactly where everyone's buried. So there's a chance, there's a possibility that what you're stepping on is on or over a cemetery. It gets back to a discussion which we actually had just yesterday, and that is, do the bodies of a non-Jew give off tumas ohel? So once again, machlokas tanayim. We saw this yesterday. It's debated already. Tanayim already debate this issue. It's not that simple. Just simply to say there may be a dead body over there, and you may be walking over the body. Okay, but the body probably outside of Eretz Yisrael, probably not Jewish. Anyway, that's one possibility in terms of why they made the gzera. Another possibility is that just simply they didn't want people traveling outside of Eretz Yisrael. And I'm only speculating right now. The Gemara doesn't say why the Chachamim made gzera. It is one of the Yud Ches Davar, meaning Tumas Ha'amim is one of the 18 gzeras enactments where Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel argue in the Gemara and Shabbos, and ultimately Beit Hillel capitulates to Beit Shammai on the Shmona Asar Davar, on the Yud Ches Davar, on the 18 enactments. This being one of the 18 enactments. Let's start with the Gemara. Nun Dalam Adbeis, we're starting right from the words Ibailahu. Ibailahu Eretz Amim Mishum Avir Gazru Alaha, Odom Mishum Gusha Gazru Alaha. So here the Gemara is asking the question. Second time in the Masechta that we've seen this question in the Gemara. When the Chachamim made an enactment, made a decree, that walking outside of Eretz Yisrael is going to bring about a Tumah Durabanan, a Tumas Meis Durabanan. So did they make it on the Gush, did they make it on the land, or did they make it also on the Avir as well? So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, okay, I know the answer. I know the answer based on our Mishnah. Because what did our Mishnah say? Our Mishnah said that if you're a Nazir and you walk through Eretz Ha'amim, so you're going to need sprinkling of day 3 and 7. Okay. Sprinkling of day 3 and 7 means what? It means that you came into contact with a mace. That's why you get sprinkled with the Paraduma on Shlishi Vishvi. So now the Gemara is going to make a very simple point, and that is that Ve'i Amar Mishum Avir Hazar Lamali. If the Gzera is Avir, so meaning that the Chachamim made Gzera just on the airspace of Eretz Ha'amim, so that means, and again, the Gemara doesn't articulate why they would do that. And I would only speculate that, again, let me not speculate. It's better not to speculate. But if the Gzera, just we'll say it definitively, if the Gzera is on the Avir, so that doesn't mean you came into contact with mace. It means that the Chachamim made Gzera on the Avir, but you didn't come into contact with mace. Why are you doing sprinkling with the ashes of the Paraduma Shlishi Yishvi? If the Gzera is only going on the Avir, it must be so Elalav Mishum Gusha. So it must be that the Gzera is on the Gush. It's on the ground, meaning for what we said earlier, that there's a concern that there's a body buried. You don't know that the body was buried over there, and now you came into contact with Tumas Mace. Otherwise, what would the Mishnah be talking about getting sprinkled on day 3 and 7? Okay, so it certainly sounds like from our Mishnah that the Gzera is going on the Gush, not on the Avir. Lo lo lama im lecha mishum avira. The Gemara says, no, I could still argue the other way. I could argue that the Gzera derabanan of Tumas Ha'amim is only going on the airspace, not on the ground. And if it's in the air and it's not on the ground and it's not directly connected to the human remains, so what's the Mishnah talking about? So the Gemara says, v'chi ketane asha'ara. The Mishnah, when says that you sprinkle on day 3 and 7, is not talking about every case in the Mishnah. The Mishnah does not mean that for every single case listed, you're going to get sprinkled on day 3 and 7. For some of the cases of the Mishnah, you're going to get sprinkled on day 3 and 7, but not for all of them. And the Gemara says, and I'll tell you what, of course that's true. Because Hakinam and Mistabra, it's logical, because one of the examples in the Mishnah is, you touched the kli that touched the mace. Now, I know just yesterday we talked about if the sword is attached to the body of a dead person, so the sword has the same status as the body. So that means that if you touch the sword, of course you're going to need sprinkling of the paraduma on day 3 and 7. But we're talking about a kli. Now, remember, Tosfos yesterday said that this halacha only applies to metal kalim. That issue is another issue which is up for debate. But we're talking right now about a kli that came into contact with a mace, but no longer is in contact. That kli does not have the status of a mace. That kli is an avatuma. You touch that kli. You don't need sprinkling on day 3 and 7. You only need hazah only when you come into contact with a mace, not with a kli that touches a mace. And the Mishnah listed that as one of the items. So what's clear from the Mishnah? That when the Mishnah at the very end says you're going to get sprinkled on day 3 and 7, it's not going on every case in the Mishnah. That's exactly the Gemara's point. So the Gemara says that the Mishnah's requirement of sprinkling on day 3 and 7 is not going on every case list in the Mishnah, and we could argue it's not going on the case of Tumas Ha'amim as well. For Tumas Ha'amim, the Gzera is on the oven, not on the Gush. You don't need sprinkling on day 3 and 7. Okay, Lema Kitanai. We're on the very top of Nenhamad Aleph. The Gemara now is going to want to suggest that the question of the Gzera de Rabbanan, of making, of walking outside of Eretz Yisrael and becoming Tamei de Rabbanan for simply walking outside of Eretz Yisrael, and whether or not that's it's a Gzera on the Gush or whether it's a Gzera on the Avir, is actually a Machlokas Tanaim. The Gemara here quotes a Braisa. You go into Eretz Amim, but you go in a chest, in some sort of box. Okay, we could today call it an airplane. Okay, Bishita Tevo Megdal. Rabbi Matame, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda Matara. So Rabbi says you are Tame. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda says you are Tahor. Okay, so it's a machlokas tanaim. A very simple, straightforward machlokas tanaim. You're not walking on the ground of Eretz Amim. You are only traveling through the air of Eretz Amim. You're in some sort of chest. So the machlokas tanaim is whether or not you're tamei or tahor. My love, so the Gemara says, a very simple explanation of this machlokas seems to be exactly what we just got done discussing. Rebbe's of Misham Avira. Rebbe's of the opinion that the Gzera is on the Avir. And right now you're traveling through the airspace, you're tamei. Simple. You didn't put your foot on the ground, doesn't matter. You're tamei, you're in the airspace. And Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, Savra Mishum Gusha. And Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda says, it's Gush. The issue is that you're going over the land, now you're not on the land, and therefore you're Tahor. Because the Gzera is only going is only on the ground, on the Gush. And let's think this through, and let's speak this out. And let's say the Tumas Eretz Ha'amim is on the Gush, it's on the land. Again, for what reason? This one we could speculate. It's because the Umas HaOlam, when they bury, they're not clear about where they bury. And there's a chance now that you're walking over a cemetery. So how is being in a chest going to help you? Because we generally know, we've seen this before in the Gemara, that when you're in a sizable container, in a sizable compartment, that container is going to be Chotzeitz Bifnei HaTumah. It's going to block the Tumah. It's interesting. Meaning, if the Gzerah Derabbanan is on Avir, and you're in the airspace, it doesn't matter that you're in a box. You're going to become tummy. If the Gzerah is because of Gusha, if it's on the ground, even though the and again, we're assuming that the Tumah of their remains is going to ascend. Their Tumah is going to go up, but the box is going to block you. Okay, that point is interesting, but the Gemara says, again, it's a simple way to explain the machlokas between Rebbe versus Rebbe Yehuda ber Rebbe Yossi. Sorry, Rebbe Yossi ber Rebbe Yehuda. So the Gemara says, "Lo." The Gemara says, although that does seem to be a simple way to explain the machlokas, the Gemara says it's not compelling. It's not the only way to explain the machlokas. To kuli amma mishum gusha. We could argue that really both Tanaim are of the opinion that the Gzera Derabanan is going not on the airspace, but rather it's going on Gush. Rather it's on the land. And it's on the fact that they bury and they're not clear and they don't mark off exactly where they bury. Mar savar ol zrok shmei ohel, umar savar lo shmei ohel. And now the issue over here becomes a different issue. The issue over here now, the tumah de Rabbanan is on the land, not on the airspace. Now, you're walking over a cemetery. You're walking over a cemetery, the tumah is going to go up, and you're obviously going to become tumah. If you're in a box, if you're in a chest, the issue now becomes as follows. If that box or chest was immobile, it was stationary, so then that's going to block from the tumah. Because as we've discussed, if it's a sizable enough container, it's going to block the tumah. But over here, it's in motion. And the issue over here, the question over here is, ohel zrok. If it is an ohel in motion, does it have the status of an ohel or does it not have the status of an ohel? The Gemara is suggesting now that's exactly the machlokas between Rebbe and Rebbe Yosef, Rebbe Yehuda. Mar sav ohel zrok shmei ohel. So one position is that a mobile ohel is still considered an ohel and therefore will block the tumah that's coming from the ground. Mar sav lo shmei ohel. And according to Rebbe, an Ohel Zrok is not considered an Ohel, and therefore the Tumah is going to go up, and even though you're encased in a chest, but the chest is in motion, the box is in motion, and therefore it's not going to block the Tumah, that, the Gemara says, could be the Machlokas, but both positions predicated on the fact that the Tumah is on the Gush, not on the Avir. The Hatay in the Gemara says, I'll tell you what, this explanation would have been good, but we have another Brice, and the Brice says, Rebbe Yosef, Rebbe Yehuda Omer, Teva Shehim Malaya Kalim, Vizar I have a teva, I have a large chest. And inside of this chest is utensils. The utensils, obviously, being a kli, are subject to tumma. But they are right now surrounded and protected by a large box. They're inside of a box. And shima le'akelim, zarka al panei hames. And you throw it over a cemetery, over human remains. So now, again, we know the very nature of tumas mace is that it goes up, it ascends. I'm throwing kalim over. Now, if it wasn't in the box, then we'd have nothing to talk about. Obviously, the kalim would become tameh, as it just went over a mace, and the tumas mace simply goes right up. That's clear. But now, the variable that makes this an interesting discussion is that the kalim are in a box, and the box normally would protect tumah, but the box is in motion. And here we go now with our question. A box is in motion. Does it have the status of an OL, protecting the contents inside from tumah? Or does a box in motion not considered an OL, and therefore the kalim inside are now subject to tumah? That's exactly the issue. And the Brice over here, quoting Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, says that if you threw the box over the maze, it's tamea. So all the contents are going to be tamei. Clearly, Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that an ohel zrok lav shmei ohel, that a ohel in motion is not considered an ohel. V'im ha'isam u'neches tahora. And then the Brisa says, now if the box were stationary, so the contents of the box would be tahor, because then the box would in fact provide protection from tumah for the contents of inside the box. But it's clear from this Brisa that according to Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, an ohel zrok shmei ohel, that it's, sorry, lav shmeil, it's not considered an ohel. And in the preceding explanation that we just gave, we said that Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda says that an ohel zrok is considered an ohel. So obviously this last explanation that we just gave is not going to be valid based on the brace we just learned. Ela dekolei amar mishum avira. So the Gemara says, okay, we're going to now provide another explanation. Again, all the Gemara is doing right now, just again, make sure that we don't get lost. All the Gemara is doing right now is wants to provide a different explanation to the machlokes between Rebbe and Rebbe Yosef, Rebbe Yehuda. The simplest way to explain the machlokes, I don't know if it's the simplest, but the first way we explain the machlokes is just a function of the gzeirah derabbanan of tumas ha'amim is going either on the avir or it's going on the gush. That's what we suggested at the very beginning. All the Gemara is doing right now is providing an alternative explanation because, again, the Gemara in its methodology will only like an explanation if it's the only explanation. But once there's another explanation, so the first explanation there is obviously not compelling. So the Gemara says that really, Ela dekolei amar mishum avira. The Tumah derabbanan that the rabbis enacted on the Eretz Ha'amim is on the Avir, not on the Gush. Okay. Now, you're in a box. You're going through the airspace. Of course you're going to be Tamei. How could there be a Machlokas if this is our supposition? So the Gemara says that really now what the issue is as follows. The Chachamim did make a gzera on traveling in the airspace, but only on things which are quote-unquote normal and usual. As a guiding rule for when the Chachamim make a gzera derabbanan, it's only going on things which are shchiach, things which are common. However, if it's something which is uncommon, it's unusual, the Chachamim are not going to make a gzera, as a general rule. And so the Gemara says that maybe that's the issue over here. If you're in a box, if you're traveling in a box, that's something which is uncommon. Now, to us, of course, that's funny, meaning traveling in a box in the air is something that we do all the time. That's right, now, right, right, correct. Now with airplanes, it's like, right, it's so interesting. From the Gemara's perspective, is who's going to be traveling in the air in a box? Like, who's going to do that? And then, like, you know, just a short, you know, 1600 years later, it's like, that's what we all do. Anyway,
the box can be carried also.
Well, I mean, back then, obviously, they're talking about the box being carried.
But where does this come from, about motion taking away the
right, right, right. I understand. It's You could spend a lot of time thinking about it, and you should. Meaning, it's good. That's exactly. That's what is the root of that whole that whole issue? Agreed. So let's the Gemara says that this is the issue. V'atayin in the Gemara quotes the Braisa. Hanichnas l'Eretz Amim b'shiratev omegdal tahor. If you go into Eretz Amim and you're in a box, so you're going to be tahor. Bekarun uvisvina uviskaria. However, if you go in a quote unquote conventional manner, you're in the airspace, you're not on the ground in a conventional manner. The Gemara gives a wonderful example. You're on a boat, a wagon or a boat. Wagon or a boat is perfectly conventional. Now, it's interesting. Boat meaning you're in the air. And quite frankly, you are. Meaning the water that's below you is not the ground. The ground is the bed of the river, sea, ocean, whatever the boat's on. That's the ground. And right now you're on the water and you're in a boat on the water. So basically, you're in the air. And back then, a very conventional way of traveling. Traveling on a boat. Or traveling on a wagon. Another very conventional way of traveling. So the Mishnah says that, sorry, it's a Braisa. Okay, it's a Tosefta. So the Tosefta says that if you're traveling in a conventional way, in an unconventional way, Shita Tevel Migdal, your tower. If you go in a conventional way, which is a wagon or a boat, and Sfina Iskaria, by the way, are two different types of boats, your tummy. So what do you see? From this Braisa, you see it's very clear that there's a distinction between conventional travel, non-conventional travel. Why should there be a difference? So the Gemara's explanation that we just gave is the reason why. Because the idea that you're going to be tameh just by leaving, by exiting Eretz Yisrael, is a gzera on the avir, not in the land. But when the Chachamim made the gzera, they only made it on normal conventional means of traveling through the air, like a wagon, like a boat. But if it's unconventional, someone stuffs you in a box and you're traveling in a box, so that's unconventional, therefore the Chachamim didn't make gzera. Okay, good. So just a braisa that shows that this distinction between conventional and conventional is in fact a good distinction. Ibai Yisayim of the Gemara now is going to give a third explanation of the machlokas between Rebbe and Rebbe Yosef and Rebbe Yehuda in terms of someone traveling in a box through Eretz Amen. The Gemara doesn't say this, but the Rush says it, Tosu says it. Right now, we're going to go the other way. We're going to assume that Eretz Amim is on the land, not on the airspace. Okay, again, that's really the core issue over here. But we're going to assume right now that everyone's in agreement that the Gzer is on the land. The issue over here is as follows. The gzera is only on the land, not on the airspace. And on top of that, being in the box is going to protect you from the tumah. And even though the box is in motion, it's an ol zrok, that's still going to be considered a box and it's going to protect you. So as long as you're inside the box, you're protected from the tumah. The Gemara says that part is clear and there's nothing to discuss about that. What's at issue over here is whether or not you may take your head and stick it outside the box. And are the Chachamim prepared to make a gzera because you're going to take your head and stick it out of the box? It's reminiscent of the Gemara and Sukkah that we learned together now a long time ago. But the Gemara and Sukkah talks about being in the Sukkah but having your table outside of the Sukkah. Where there, the Machlok, Shem, B'Shamah, and B'Silla, whether or not such a Sukkah would be a valid Sukkah. And over there, what's the issue? What's the concern? Concern is that if the table is outside the Sukkah, so even though you're physically inside the Sukkah, but you may take your head and be drawn by the food, which is pretty normal, and you're going to go outside of the confines of the Sukkah. Okay, over here, I guess it's just the idea. Maybe the idea is that you're confined and you want to like look outside, right? How many people are running on a plane want a window seat? I don't understand those people. The aisle's much better, but anyway, but in other words, you know, you're going to be tempted to put your head outside. So the Gemara says, and that's the issue over here. Va'atanya, and the Gemara quotes a braisa. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Nichnas Eretz Amim B'Shitatav Amigdal Tahor, Ad Sheyotzei Rosho L'Sham Rosho Rubo. If you take your head, you extend it out. Outside, you take your body, extend outside, so you're going to be tummy. So again, so you see over here clearly that Rebbe holds that the gzera is even before you take your head outside, you're going to be tummy, because Rebbe is of the opinion that there's a gzera. And included in the gzera is that you may take your head and poke it outside. So even before you do so, you're going to be tummy. And Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda says, no. As long as you're within the box, you're fine. Once you take your head and you peek it outside, or you take your body and you put it outside, so then and only then you're going to be tummy. So another way to explain the machlokas. So again, the first half of today's daf, basically the question was, when the Chachamim made a gzera of Tumas Ha'amim. And they did. Meaning, the starting point of the whole discussion is the Chachamim made a gzera that if you exit Eretz Yisrael and you go outside of Eretz Yisrael, you're Tamei. Tumas Meis Derabanan. And it's listed in our Mishnah as one of the things that makes a Nazir Tamei, but it doesn't require him to reboot his Naziris. Rebooting of Naziris is only when you come into contact with Tumah D'Oraisa, with all the cases mentioned on Mem Tes Amud Beis. Our Mishnah in Dalet is talking about the cases where a Nazir is Tamei, but his Naziris is only going to be on suspension. And then he'll resume when he finishes his Tumah. And one of this is Eretz Amim. And then for the first half of today's daf, the discussion on the Gemara was, is it Tumah D'Rabbanan of Eretz Amim on the airspace, or is it on the land? And the Gemara leaves this question unresolved. Right, outside, and she, right, and they required her to count again. I was wondering that very.
And I think it's interesting that the ark, this week, the
parsha
of Noah in the ark.
Right. Very good. Maschil umone. Our Mishnah says that in certain circumstances you have to start. No, and the Mishnah says it doesn't discount the days prior. Again, we're focusing on the Mishnah and Dalet. And umaschil umone miyan. And then when you finish here, you count again. You resume count when you finish your tahara process. I'm Rav Chisa Loshana Lebenaziris Muatzes of Lebenaziris Meruba Mitzlak Nami Salkin Lay. Rav Chisa says the following: one of the cases mentioned in the Mishnah is Yura Mitzora, Mitzora Mochlat. You are definitive Mitzora. Our Mishnah taught us that if you are a definitive Mitzora in the middle of your Naziris, so it's going to put your Naziris on suspension. Which means, the days you counted before your Mitzora, good. The days that you count after your Mitzora, good as well. But while you're Mitzora and while going through the Tahara process of Tzaras, those days don't count, you're on suspension. Okay. Rav Chisda says, that's true, but that's only true if you are a minimalist Nazir. Once you take on a long-term Nazirus, so then those days count as well. And why? And this goes back to a point that we also made earlier in the Masechta. Because when you're a Mitzara, what's wrong with being a Mitzara and being a Nazir? Meaning, what is it about the Mitzara that runs counter to being a Nazir? Really nothing. Meaning, of course you're Tameh, while you're a Mitzara, you're Chutz Machane, you're outside the camp during your Tahara process, but the truth of the matter is nothing. Really, the only issue of being a Mitzara is that at the conclusion of your Tzaras, and when you go through a Tahara process, you're going to have to shave. You shave your body. So that's really the only thing that runs counter to your Naziris. But the Mitzara itself, nothing about it runs counter to your Naziris. So Rav Chisda says, look, let's say you're a Nazir for 30 days, minimalist Naziris. And on day 20, just for example, on day 20, turns out now you're a Mitzara. Now what? So now you're going to go through the Tahara process and you're going to shave. The only problem now is that you are now a hairless Nazir. And so, and we know that the conclusion of your Nazirus, you need to shave, and you not only need to shave, but you need to shave a lock of hair. So you need 30 days. So that's exactly what Rav Chisda is saying, is that the only reason why you're on suspension is only because after your Mitzvah is over, you just need to grow hair again. So Rav Chisda says, let's now envision that you're not a minimalist Nazir. You're not a 30-day Nazir. But let's say you're a Nazir for 60 days. Let's say you're a Nazir for 100 days. And in the middle, you're a Mitzvah. Mitzvah Mukhla. You're a definitive Mitzvah. Now you finish your Tzaras, you become Tahor, and you have plenty of time left at the end to grow hair. Then Rav Chisda says, you're good. Meaning, you are going to have hair at the end of your Naziris, and even if you counted those days during the interim, you're still going to have time to grow out your hair to conclude your Naziris. Those days while you're a Mitzvah can, in fact, count towards your Naziris. That is Rav Chisda's point. Let's see this again inside in the Gemara. I'm Rav Chisda, Loshana Le Benaziris Muatas, of Benaziris Meruba, Mislak Nami Salkin. Those days are going to count towards your Naziris. Meitzer Rav Shravi, so Rav Shravi says, okay, but I'm bothered because let's look back at our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says, Maschil Mona Miyad. The Mishnah says, it's a quote right from the Mishnah, that you get to resume right away, and after you finish your Tahara process, the Ein Mevatel Bahen Es HaKodmin. And on top of that, it doesn't it doesn't disregard, discount the days that you counted prior. Now, Bimai. Good, that's all we did was just review the Mishnah, and the Gemara's question is very simple. What are we talking about? Elam of Nazir's Muatas. If we're talking about a Nazir's Muatas, a minimalist 30-day Nazir's. So, Kabai Gidol Seir. So, what do you mean? What do you mean? You're on suspension, but all those days that you counted beforehand, they're good. No, they're not. They're not good. Because, again, just a simple example. Day 20 turned out to be Mitzorah. Okay, and let's say before you get to day 30, day 28, day 29, you finish your Tahara process from your Mitzorah. So, you counted 20 good days. Can you use those days now? No, of course not. Because now that you finished your tzaras, and now that you had a tahara, you're shaved. Your whole body is shaved, including your head. So you're going to need to count another 30 days. So when the Mishnah... Huh?
Hair growth.
Right. You're going to need to... Right. You need hair growth. And you need, so you're going to need... Huh? 30 days. We had a discussion, the sheet of Rabbi Eliezer early in the Masechta, this is what you're remembering, that according to Rabbi Eliezer, once you finish your count, and then you become hairless, so then you only need 7 days. But if you didn't finish your count, and you lost your hair sometimes in the middle, so you're going to need a minimum of a 30-day growth. So over here, of course you can't count the days prior. Even though you count to 20 days, that's wonderful. But they don't count. And they don't count simply because you need a 30-day hair growth. So the Mishnah can't be talking about a minimalist Nazir, Ella, La B'Nazir's Merubah. It must be that the Mishnah is talking about where you're a Nazir Merubah, where you are a long-term Nazir. V'Ketani, and the Mishnah says, Maskel Amon Miad. And the Mishnah yet says that you're going to take those days, before you are a Mitzorah, and apply them to the days after you are a Mitzorah. So Rav Chista, it does not sound like you're right. Because Rav Chista says that if it's a long-term Nazirus, and you become a Mitzorah in the interim, those days can count. And from the simple reading of the Mishnah, and we've ruled out that the Mishnah can't be talking about a Nazir Muatis, it's not talking about minimalist Nazir. So in the Mishnah's case, it must be that the Mishnah is talking about Nazir Merubah, and the simple reading of the Mishnah is that the interim days do not count, and this runs contrary to what Rav Chista was telling us. So the Gemara says, "Most of them are the Gemara says, "Okay, it's a good question," but the Gemara says, "But I'm going to provide an answer, and that is Benazir's Bas Chamishim Yom." Maybe the Mishnah is talking about the following scenario: you're a Nazir, and you dedicate yourself to being a Nazir for 50 days, the Yosef Esrin, and what happened is that you count to 20 days. And then, day 21, turned out that you're a Mitzorah. Okay, so now you're on suspension. Again, you declared yourself to be a Nazir for 50 days. After day 20, now you turn out to be a Mitzorah. So, Megalech Tzaraso. So what do you do? So you go through the Tahara process. Including the Tahara process, Giluach. At the end of your purification of your Tzaras, you have to shave your entire body, of course, including your head. V'hadu Yosef. Now what are you going to do? You're going to finish your Naziris. So how many days are you going to count now? You need 30 days. That's what the Mishnah is talking about. Now, I would have loved to have counted the interim days, and according to Rav Chista, in theory, you could have counted the interim days. It just happens to be now that you said you're going to be 50-day Nazir. You already served 20 of your 50 days. So now, at the end of your Tzaras, those days, in theory, could have counted. The problem is, I need hair growth. How many day hair growth do I need? A 30-day hair growth. That's why I'm going to have to count another 30 days, and the 20 days prior to my Mitzaras is going to count. The 30 days afterwards is going to count. I can't count the middle day simply because I need hair growth. That's all. Tausin Yom and Denazir. Da Islay Gidol Seir. Because I need Gidol Seir. I need a growth of hair. But if the case in the Mishnah were, let's say, 100-day Nazirus, and there is time permitted to count 30 days after your tzaras is done, and include in that also the days during your tzaras. So the Gemara says that for sure would be okay. That would be acceptable. Okay, let's quickly review. Let's review today's daf, and we'll pick it up tomorrow. So again, I know short daf. So again, the Mishnah mentioned a number of tumos that a nazir comes into contact with he is going to be tamei, but it's not going to eradicate. It will not expunge his nazirus. The case that we discussed today at length was Eretz Amim. The Chachamim made gzeira de rabbanan, tuma de rabbanan, that if you exit Eretz Yisrael, so you're going to be walking through tuma, you are going to be tamei, tamei mid rabbanan. The nazir, if he does so, cannot apply those days towards his nazirus. So, but he does not have to be megalech. There's no need for him to reboot, but rather those days just simply put his nazirus on suspension. The question that we ask today is: when the chachamim made a gzera on tumas ha'amim, is it going on the avir? Is it going on the gush? So the question is asked. The question could be argued in what we saw today three different ways. Machlokus between Rebbe and Rebbe Yosef Rebbe Yehuda. Someone is encapsulated in a box and is transported through Eretz Amim. Does he become tummy? Rebbe says yes. Rebbe Yosef Rebbe Yehuda says no. And we have three different ways of explaining that machlokus. Then the Mishnah goes on to describe how, if you're a Mitzora during a Naziris, so those days do not count towards your Naziris. The days before still are intact. The days afterwards will be intact. But the days during your Tzaras cannot be counted. Rav Chista says it's only talking about Naziris Moetis. It's not talking about Naziris Merubah. There is nothing inherently wrong with counting your Naziris while your Mitzora just happens to be, says Rav Chista, that you need hair growth at the end. Okay, we are asking questions on Rav Chista. The Gemara to this point is defending Rav Chista. Tomorrow we are going to continue challenging the position of Rav Chista.